RadioMD. RadioMD.com.
Dr. Michael Fenster is a cardiologist, a gourmet chef, author, TV personality, and host of Code Delicious. Here's Dr. Mike.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Welcome to Code Delicious. I am Dr. Mike, and I'm delighted to have a real world-class specialist with us for this segment today. Dr. Dimitri Alden has dedicated his life to helping patients deal and cure hepatic or liver cancer, pancreatic cancer, and the cancers that involves the biliohepatic ducts, which are these connections between the gallbladder and the liver and the pancreas. He's got already in his young career, he's already incredibly distinguished, done over 3,500 surgeries in less than 15 years. He travels around the world to lecture and actually to perform operations. He is recognized as one of the specialists in this very sort of focal, but very, very important area. You know, we often hear about colon cancer. We don't hear so much about these other cancers, but they're very important, especially if you, as I do, happen to know or have had family members who've suffered from this. So without any further ado, I want to introduce and welcome Dr. Dimitri Alden to the program. Dr. Alden, thank you so much for taking the time to be here today.
Thank you for having me.
So can you tell the folks a little bit about your training? Because really, you've kind of covered the globe. And I think that sometimes that is very, very important in our perspective of how to approach problems.
Well, it's actually interesting. My life has been very unusual in terms of my educational path because I had the luxury of traveling the world, not necessarily by my own choice initially, but I grew up in Soviet Union and went to medical school in Moscow, which is called today Moscow Medical University. And because of my intricate and detailed knowledge of French language, at the same time, I was able to travel to France after completing my medical school and get trained there in surgery and advanced surgery and subsequently in liver surgery and liver transplantation. From where I moved to the United States, where I did 5 years of research and hepatocellular carcinoma and liver transplantation. And then I did the basic and standard surgical residency like everyone else has to do here in the U.S. to get requalified. And I've been in private practice for the last 15 years.
But and when you were in France, if I'm not mistaken, you actually studied in Paris. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes,
I'm free to go off and get your opinion and take on some of the French cuisine, right?
Absolutely. Well, you know, when I was studying liver surgery in France, it was not the time to sample a lot of the French cuisine because it was very intense and very productive training because it happened in one of the most famous liver surgery centers around the world and under auspices of the real modern father of liver surgery. Who is, without any doubt, is considered the biggest authority in liver surgery and liver transplantation around the globe.
Okay. Now I'm going to go off track one time. This is just for a personal query. So while you were in France and while you were studying and learning about the liver, did you or did you not eat pâté?
Oh, I ate pâté because I was a resident and a trainee and a student, and you eat what you can. You sleep when you can.
And well, yeah, we've sort of all been there. We have that, you know, when you're going through the training in medicine, it's always sleep, eat what and when you can. So those are the kind of rules to live by. So was it the pâté that made you focus in on liver and pancreatic disease, or what drove you to that? Because that's kind of a unique specialty.
Right, it's certainly not. I actually completed initial surgical training in Moscow, and at the time in Soviet Union, liver surgery didn't really exist. And I remember, and I tell these stories to my students and residents now, that I've seen young people with what I know now, a treatable liver or pancreatic cancer, being committed to hospice care or basically sent home to die at the time in the late 80s in Soviet Union. And when I traveled to France, that's when I for the first time, was able to see a liver operation for liver cancer. I was so fascinated with the technique and the ability to do something about this that I immediately jumped on the idea of getting trained, and that's how I ended up in Paris and spoke to the professor who was running the center at the time. And I happened to be the first person from the Soviet Union to go through the training there.
Congratulations.
Very lucky. Yeah, thanks.
Well, and congratulations, because that's certainly something. And having been to France, and at least certainly with the food, and I know that it would apply to medicine. You know, you have to sort of earn your stripes there. They don't give you anything in the kitchen, and they don't give you anything, I'm sure, in the operating room either. So kudos to you. I think that speaks to your level of skill. And I want to ask you, too, specifically with terms to liver and pancreatic disease in this country. You know, people talk about cancer, and there's a lot of prostate cancer awareness for men. Breast cancer certainly is in the news, and rightfully so for women. And when we talk about the GI, the gastrointestinal cancers, most people in the United States really kind of focus on colon cancer. So can you give us a little background, maybe the incidence and the types of things, these malignancies that you're involved in helping treat for both the liver and the pancreas?
Well, it is actually a very complex question, and we can spend literally hours talking about it. But what's important to understand that in this country, up until probably a few months ago, we were dealing with the most complex epidemic of hepatitis C without being able to treat it. Now, why I'm talking about hepatitis C and not cancer, because hepatitis causes cancer, whether it's hepatitis B or hepatitis C, these diseases are known to cause hepatocellular carcinoma or primary liver cancer or HCC in the medical lingo, but those are classic cancers of the liver that we deal with on a regular basis. And someone can say, well, it's very rare and it only happens in people who use drugs, alcohol, or basically outcasts of the society, but it's not true. There are a lot of really good citizens that happen to be infected with hepatitis C in the past, or they've immigrated from other countries where they got infected with hepatitis B or C, depending on where they're coming from. The most prevalent area in the world is Southeast Asia with hepatitis B. Western world, like Europe and the United States, tend to have much larger scale of hepatitis C, but I have patients with both. And these people come with cancers, and we have to treat them. Now, why I'm talking about it, and I use every opportunity to speak about hepatitis C, because now we have treatment. There are two new drugs that we use most commonly. There are actually more than two available. But these drugs can treat hepatitis C with a 95% confidence in 12 weeks. And if hepatitis C is treated, liver cancer is significantly decreased in incidence. But the numbers are fairly staggering, and it's in millions. There's about 4.9 to 5.5 million people infected with hepatitis C in the United States, and about 10% of them will develop liver cancer. So these are massive numbers.
Yeah, and I don't think people appreciate that. And certainly, you know, being involved in healthcare, you know, as you said, back in the day, I had a colleague who got a needle stick as a fellow and then died from hepatitis. So it is extremely communicable. To give folks an idea, people are, you know, in this country, obviously very aware of AIDS and the ability for that to be sexually transmitted. But the HIV virus, once it's outside the body, is actually a very fragile virus compared particularly to something like hepatitis C, which can survive, you know, for hours, and it takes a much lower inoculum, a much lower dose for you to contract that disease. And as you said, then, you know, one of the sequelae, if it's not, it's full-blown cirrhosis, can be the development of carcinomas. And you know, one of the things that is always, I'm sure, a challenge that you run into every day is that people present and tend to present with hepatic and pancreatic carcinomas later and in more advanced state than they might for something like a colon cancer or a malignant polyp. Do you have any tips for the audience? Is there things that people should watch for or be aware of that they say, hey, you know, this is right, I might need to go get this checked out?
Well, it is a great question. I'm glad you asked it. It's It is actually a current guideline from Center for Disease Control, or CDC, that everyone who was born after 1945 and about 1969, but I would extend that to current, basically, time, should get tested for hepatitis C. And in my opinion, everyone should get tested for hepatitis C at least once. So for folks who are listening, if you're going to your annual checkup and you're seeing your primary care physician, it's a simple blood test. It's not costly. It's easy to perform, and it could save your life. In the past, a lot of people would avoid being tested because of fear of various repercussions at work, in the family, and so forth, because of the stigma associated with hepatitis C. But we need to educate people and explain to them that hepatitis C can be transmitted by various routes, from contaminated needles to sharing toothbrushes and razors. It could be, it also could be transmitted using sexual intercourse, but the rate of inoculation with hepatitis C is very low, and in a lot of my patients, if they come to me and we need to clear up the situation with partners, when one partner has hepatitis C and the other one does not, it doesn't mean anything. A lot of people can live together with hepatitis, with one partner having hepatitis C and not infecting the other partner. But what's important to come back is to get tested. Please do get tested, get tested, get tested. Just the same campaign that we have for colonoscopy for people after 50, we see it all the time on television. We need to have this campaign around the country about testing for hepatitis C. Why? Because it can save your life. If hepatitis C is diagnosed, it can be treated. If it's an advanced stage, you can go under surveillance, and if the cancer is diagnosed, it can be treated early, and it could be cured. There are a lot of ways to cure hepatocellular carcinoma or primary liver cancer today.
And could you share some of those with us? I think those are great points, and I think that is a great and very important point for our listeners to realize. Again, as I said, you know, decades ago there was no cure for hepatitis C. People didn't want to be tested for it because there wasn't a cure, there wasn't a treatment, and there was a stigma and potentially repercussions attached to that diagnosis. But it's completely different now, as you point out. And so that is something that if they haven't done in recent times or in their lifetime, certainly to do. And let me ask you, what are some of these treatments? We talked about for hepatitis C, but say somebody does come in with a liver cancer. They got tested. They found out, oh, I've got hepatitis C. Now I've got maybe a liver cancer. What are some of the treatments and things? Because, you know, people hear cancer, they hear cancer in the liver, and they immediately think there's no hope left.
Well, that is not necessarily true. If the cancer is diagnosed early enough, even if it's an advanced stage, in many ways it's treatable. The earlier it's diagnosed, the easier to treat it. For instance, if the patient has a small amount of cancer in the liver and they qualify for liver transplantation for hepatocellular carcinoma or liver cancer, results are exactly the same in terms of patient survival as results of liver transplantation for non-cancer reasons. So it's very important to understand that if you're diagnosed early enough, your life can be saved. Additionally, sometimes we choose to remove the liver cancer tumor first if it's easily removable, and then monitor the patient for sometimes years before a new tumor comes up, or it may never come up again if the hepatitis C is treated. So,
you know, a lot of what you're doing, just so folks know, you know, is, and particularly, I think oncology was one of the first to take a team approach with your skills of yourself as a surgical oncologist, a specialty in hepatic and pancreatic, medical oncologist, radiation oncologist, etc. But we see this is sort of expanding now to include groups that might not have necessarily been involved, you know, 20 years ago, what some might consider adjunctive therapies. So what are your thoughts on that, and where do you see things maybe heading 5-10 years down the road?
Well, it's fascinating because we keep expanding our team, and we're getting bigger and bigger in terms of specialties and subspecialties within the specialty. For instance, if one of the mainstays of treatments for liver cancer was radiological blockage of the blood vessel called embolization, or when you stop the blood flow to the tumor trying to stop its growth, that used to be one of the mainstays of treatment. Today, we have a whole plethora of various devices that could be inserted into the tumor and destroy it, such as radio frequency machine, microwave ablation, and one of the newest treatments is called radioactive microspheres that get injected into the blood vessels that feed the tumor. And those microscopic spheres, they surround the tumor all around, and they emit radiation, destroying the tumor. So there are a lot of other potential ways of dealing with cancers in the liver, not so much for primary cancer, but for metastatic cancer, a cancer that comes from another area and spreads into the liver, such as colon cancer being one of the most common ones. Sometimes we're able to harvest a portion of the tumor, send that tumor for a specific analysis. One of my favorite ones is the analysis of chemotherapy sensitivity studies, which is done in a laboratory when the tumor cells get cultured, and then they get tested against the various cocktails of chemotherapy drugs, basically identifying the best treatment individual for this particular patient. And just to give you a couple of examples.
So for our listeners, basically what you're able to do now is take the tumor out, find its weak points, and then make a personalized cocktail to deal with that person's tumor. Because that really is, you know, for a lot of listeners, I'm sure that is kind of like, wow, Star Trek is here.
That's where the future is. And think about antibiotics. In the past, we had one or two antibiotics, and we used to treat every infection with this particular antibiotic. But now we have literally hundreds of drugs. So how do we know which one is going to work? We take bacterias, we culture them, and we test them against various antibiotics, and that's how we identify which one will be the most successful. The same concept can be applied to cancer, because cancer cells develop and spread, just like bacteria develop and spread. So by identifying the drug that will work the best, we can individualize the treatment and provide the best potential for cure. And I think that's where the future is going.
That is really, you know, very exciting news, and it's so good when we're talking about things that I think frighten a lot of people and scare a lot of people, and you know can affect lives, that you know people are often confronted and they hear this diagnosis and it involves the liver. As I said, you know, it can be shattering. That there is a lot of hope and a lot of incredible research being done. I want to finish up with one kind of get your opinion on. This topic is that you mentioned metastatic disease, and of course it's because the liver is such a powerful detoxifying organ for us. Everything from all the organs and areas of the body come through the liver, and if unfortunately there's a cancer somewhere else, it can come and implant in the liver. So we often hear about, you know, cleanses and detoxifying regimens to detox the body's natural detoxer, the liver. So what are your thoughts on this for our listeners? And is there any evidence or validity that these work and are useful, or are they dangerous in your opinion?
Absolutely. Yes and no. And the interesting part about yes and no is that if you look at any studies and any work that's been published prior to, let's say, 2010, everyone in medical and not so medical community talked about antioxidants, how they're good, how they're helpful, how you should take them anytime to prevent cancer, and certainly how can they be helpful if you have cancer and so forth. But now, for the last couple of years, there's study after study that comes out that's saying that antioxidants can actually compromise the patient and make the patient more susceptible to cancer and actually help cancer spread.
So it's coming back to that old rule that I've always said, and when it comes to food, everything in moderation. Dr. Autumn, thank you so much for being here. You are listening to Code Delicious with Dr. Mike on Radio MD.